start the recording.
Okay. All right, then we won't do a refresh. So then I guess what we will start doing, and so oh thanks, Eileen. Okay, with the thumbs up and Kaylin as well. I don't recognize your names. So nice to have you. Everyone here, obviously Organization Design Forum, and we have a few people on here, longtime participants. And as you've figured out, what we'll be doing is going over the curated content and discussing how it helped us or how it made us think, even if it made us uncomfortable. So what we're going to do first is a poll around the one we found, I think, most useful. Is that the language we use? And then we do a second poll around what we found like disturbing, even if it wasn't useful or
Causes tension.
causes tension. That's it. Thanks. That's the word. Okay, so
Okay, I'll
let's
start the
do our
poll
first
for
poll.
the which article did you find most useful? And Kaylin, welcome. Glad you're here to join us today, and you're good to observe and or jump in at any point in time you feel so inclined. All right, we have a three-way tie right now for the three people that have voted. So I'm going to see if there's anybody else that wants to break the tie or
I'm going to hold my vote on this one.
commit you to discussing them all. Oh, somebody just broke it. All right, here we go.
Okay, so we had
Thanks.
trends that will shape work and beyond. So, what we're going to do, we'll probably go through and talk about all three and then maybe say why we didn't like the other ones. But obviously, we'll start with that nine trends. And have someone who voted for that please step up and say why you found that most useful. Somebody must have voted for it. Maybe Eileen, or maybe it was Eileen and Kaylin, and you can't come off mute.
No,
Mark or Jardina, did you vote for
I
that?
didn't vote.
I didn't
You didn't
vote.
vote for it?
So I voted for this one, and I think my reason was that I'm seeing a number of these things in my organization in some form. And so it feels like I actually shared the article with our OD, org effectiveness consultant, because there's challenges that we're seeing that specifically tie into some of these things. And our group's trying to roll out high reliability organizing. And so this had components to it that felt like it reinforced that as well. So it just felt like it was a nice synopsis. Maybe not new information, but just a nice way to kind of package up some things and themes that would make it easy to communicate with leaders.
Validate your thinking or affirm what you're experiencing. Yeah. Can you tell us some of the things, because there were nine things on there. So did anything jump out at you in terms of the experience and affirmation?
Let me just get the article up. Conflict resolution, a must-have skill, was definitely one that we're hearing from our managers as something that they're just needing and running into a lot more conflict. I'm in healthcare, so we see that also with patients to care providers, conflict challenges. And the shift away from, I think, moving towards expertise and not just having the degree. And that's one of those high reliability concepts that we're trying to reinforce around, deference to expertise. We've always had a strong DEI component, so that's not actually new. And what was the other one? I think we've also have been disrupted a lot by natural disasters as an organization. So we have locations in California, which are affected by fires, Hawaii, which was in Lahaina. We lost a clinic, that kind of thing. So we're seeing the organization have to respond very practically to people's needs.
Oh, great. Thank you. Now we've got three new joiners, and I saw one kind of going on and off, so possibly not in an area of high connection. So what we're doing is we voted on the three articles we thought were most useful, and we're going through discussing those. And the one we're on now is the one about nine trends. And we if you looked at that, and what that was it was talking about disruption in the environment and subsequent disruption in the workplace. And so a few trends were identified there. So we were discussing that. And I want to, before I ask these other people to chime in, I'm curious, Miriam, what is kind of happening or what are you observing around the nature of expertise? Because I found that point really interesting around just, you know, seeing it differently. So I'm just curious for, we can get one or two sentences for your perspective, and then we'll let some of the others chime in if they read it.
Well, actually, I think it's a challenge point. It's one of those conflict points because they're trying to move to more centralization, standardization, and that's pulling from local experts. And so there's tension around wanting to, you know, saying one thing, but acting another way. So it's an interesting dimension that we're in. It's not resolved. Yet we have people who are clearly experts and have been functioning for years at a local level, doing things very well. And so it's an interesting dichotomy that we're experiencing.
Hey, well, darn, I was hoping there was an answer. That's why.
No, sorry. We're in the thick of it.
Yeah, it's probably happening everywhere. Does anyone else want to chime in on that article? And then for the later joiners are going on and off. Sorry, one second, Jardina. We're talking about the 9 trends article. So that was the one we started with. Jardina, go ahead.
I was trying. I couldn't find my raise hand thing. That's why I was going like this. So about the skills, it's so interesting that they say degrees become less valuable than skills. So on some level, I do think there's room for disruption about degrees, like the degree piece of paper. But we had this in software many years ago where it was like, we just care about that you know the programming skill, and we devalued knowing how to program. So you'd get these terrible programmers who knew the syntax of a language. And that's what scares me about that is like, are we going to be like just looking at that surface level of the skill and not the deeper understanding?
Yeah, that's really interesting because there's some kind of a test there. That was the, that's the whole, there's a startup that's working on that now, actually testing of skills and doing skills. It's Workera AI and artificial intelligence. So that what you just said has been noted and, you know, is being addressed, not large scale, obviously, but, you know, you're not the only one to make that observation. Kaylin, I hope I'm saying your name right. Would you like to chime in?
Yeah, and apologies for not being on camera. I'm at the end of a cold and you just don't want to see me on camera. I was intrigued by the skills shift, the AI shift, the 4-day work week shift. So we are starting to do more and more activity analysis, understanding and surveying people about how they're spending their time and using that as part of our redesign of organizations. And I think all three of those challenge the way that we've been thinking about doing that in terms of, you know, what does full capacity look like? What is the taxonomy of activities that we would offer to people to choose from? Or just how do we think about structuring jobs in general? So all of those we probably can work around. We've seen the signs coming and are starting to think about that. But then when I look at some of these other shifts on the list, around some of the benefits what was the other one? The climate protection one, for example. I think HR doesn't do great with a lot of change all at once. And so if we're trying to absorb some of this change to the way roles are structured and teams are structured at the same time that like our core HR is also trying to absorb shifts, it just doesn't feel like we're all going to be able to absorb that all at once. And so then we become, you know, have some internal tension about whose changes go first.
Okay, thank you. Now, another grounding moment, because I saw another couple of people pop on. We're talking about the trends article, because that came out as the one that we found most useful. So that we're spending roughly half the call talking about the articles that were ranked most useful, and then we'll spend the other half around the ones we found disturbing. So just wanted to ground us there and then open it up to anybody else who wants to comment on that trends article, and then we'll get to the next one. No? Okay.
I know you already spoke. I don't want to speak twice, but there's more in this article. I think there's a couple of other things here. They talked about this 4-day, there was two things. So 4-day work weeks become the norm. And then they also talked about career paths will collapse. So those two to me are like, is anyone working an 8-hour day anyway? So like it's a 4-day work week. It's not like we're working a 5-day, 8-hour day work week anyway. And then the career paths will collapse was like the same thing. It was like, do you think that's not already happening? Like that's been happening a long time ago. Now you're just making it official, I think.
I thought Miriam's point about it's nothing new, but a nice summary. I think that's kind of getting at that with the career path collapse. Yeah. The 4 day thing. I mean, we've been hearing about that for years and years. To me, it just seems like some kind of a working towards resolving more flexibility, because amazing number of people are really struggling with this hybrid, situation and stuff still in different ways. Yeah. And that was kind of how I interpreted that. I don't know what anybody else's take on that was.
Yeah. That is what they're saying, but it's sort of like, oh, here's a benefit. You can work 4 days, but not really, because nobody works a 40-hour week. So you have to solve the two things together, is my point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, thank you. What was this? If we don't have anything else on that, let's go to the second one. It was either the Boeing one or I forgot the other one, Tanya. I'm sorry if you could remind us. The second article, second place article?
Yep, I gotta look it up. So there was a two-way tie between how to wire your organization to excel at problem solving and the Boeing's tragedy, the fall of an American icon.
Okay, let's just go alpha. Boeing is a B. For someone who voted for the Boeing article as useful, what were your thoughts and reactions to that? I think some of you may be in places where you can't get off mute, not favorable. I will talk about that one. I voted for that one, and I find this no end of fascinating. So it had kind of two points. One was around governance and not having a board member around safety, which seemed incredible because every other, peer of theirs has that, that safety obviously is important for air. And then the other one was, tale as old as time, the acquisition taking over and the culture changing from finance to engineering. The reason I find that story fascinating is what they didn't include in that article, which I still thought it was a good summary, but with that software problem they had where the Ethiopian airline crashed, and I think I forgot where the other one was, Indonesia, I think, that software problem had happened at least 50 times and other pilots were able to recover. And the way we know that is there's a really good article that I'll try to go find and put in the chat before we end. And he researched it and he follows like pilot blogs and online pilot forums. And they talked about it and they said, this happened and this is what I did. And so his point in his article was losing the concept of airmanship. Fewer pilots are out of the military, trained by the military. And so they just literally haven't got the exposure and the hours to extreme conditions that military training will give you. And so, and that was, the ones that were able to recover were the ones that had the military background. And so his point was, with that changing, Boeing needs to change as well. And they didn't catch that. So I would have put a third item on the list that makes a lot of sense. The demographic of your users, which are pilots, is changing significantly. And that wasn't there. So that was why I found that one interesting. Other comments? And don't forget, chime in if you found it ridiculous, too. I mean, we want to hear, just because the vote was more popular that it was useful, we still want to hear if anybody finds anything not useful.
Now, I thought that wasn't my choice, but I certainly found the same points you just mentioned very interesting. And especially in an organization like Boeing, I mean, the warning signs were there really early on, and for leadership or management not to make some of those decisions, to focus on quality and safety. It's like, gosh, of all things, right? You can cut costs in any company, but when you're doing that at expense of safety in something like an airplane, that's just pretty crazy. But overall, I think, and it connected to the article I really liked around the wiring, which was the management system. I mean, if you're not a healthy organization and don't have a good management operating system, so to speak, to be able to deal with those things, I think that's, it's a lot of the outcome of, sure, the acquisition and all that. But I feel like they really had an unhealthy organization, unable to, see those things and solve for those things.
Anyone else? Thanks. Go ahead,
Jardine. I would add on to what you were saying before, Gina, about the trained airmanship.
They called it airmanship. That was a word he used, not my word.
I thought there was something else, not in this article, but in other articles about this, because I am also obsessed with this topic, and there's a great documentary on it too. But it was about that you had to like pay extra for the training to where you would have learned how to handle this error. And that's like a, that's goes to the point of like, they moved to be financial instead of engineering. Like, hey, if you want to not crash, you need to pay extra. That's not really a great policy.
Yeah. Nice plane you got there. Be ashamed if anything happened to it, right?
Exactly.
I didn't realize that. I hadn't read that. That was, but that's par for the course for what they were trying to do. Charge for everything seems to be the new model. Did anyone find that article not useful? I'm like Jardine. I've got a bias there because I've been so interested in this topic for quite a while, watching this. Because, and I'm thinking back to, you know, I'm a history buff, as any of you know me, and so I have spent a lot of time like reading about the industry, and I wrote a thesis on it in my undergrad, and so I just have a thing with this. So I might be biased, but I wondered if anybody found it not useful or disturbing.
I did find it not useful, but I'll let others speak, but I not as much as some of the other things I'd read on this topic.
Okay.
I thought it was very useful. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I did too, because I knew so much already though. So that's why. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I think very useful. And from an org, from a case study org design perspective, right, it is, you know, when they knew of things like their business model or operating model changing and supply chain being so important, or they had some more of those insights, but I don't think they fully leveraged, you know, what again, if you were taking a really good redesign approach of those critical components to being successful, they didn't read the signs.
They didn't read.
I agree. I thought it was interesting, but not deep enough. It felt like I was reading an article on the newspaper. With an interesting case, but not deep on the OD piece.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Can you hear me?
It's a little echoey, but we can hear you.
Can you hear me? All right. Sorry, I'm having to use my cell phone.
Oh, okay. That's a little bit better.
Can you hear me?
Try that.
Okay. I am in a neutral zone on this. I thought it was interesting, but particularly it would be really great to better understand a little bit more detail around the implications of what so many companies are now doing is moving things to lower cost geos and the implications to capabilities and what that does to operating models. And it's very financially driven. So I don't think Boeing is alone in this, but it leads companies to make unfortunate trade-offs. And in Boeing's case, it, you know, safety was an unfortunate trade-off that was, you know, implicated. It was fascinating, but I really, what zeroed in on for me was the cost reduction priorities and moving to lower cost geos, because that is, everyone is on a tear to do that right now, broadly speaking.
Yeah, and they said in that article, too fast, too complex was what they said to be able to do that. And in their case, what they're selling is safety, and lost sight of that. What struck me in that article, before we go on to the next one, so the history of the airlines is they came up getting mail contracts from the government and doing crop dusting, you know, like for mosquitoes. And so the first passengers literally sat on mail sacks. That was how they got around, and they put up with that and probably had a low expectation of safety. Then it got kind of where it peaked, where there was a higher expectation of safety, and it seems like people don't have that visibility now. So the other thing that struck me in reading that was maybe we're taking this for granted, and there needs to be more of a, you know, like a passenger representation. There's pilot and flight attendant representation, but there doesn't seem to be any advocate for the passenger in this. And that would be expected now because we're no longer sitting on mail sacks. Okay. And anyone else on that article? Otherwise, let's talk about that wiring article. And the layers and moving problems around. Go ahead, Miriam.
I just have one last comment on this piece that sort of struck me as I was reading this. It was that really early on when they allowed the culture, like when they took McDonnell Douglas and they merged with them, it's just who wasn't thinking to say, okay, if that company's failing, why would we allow them to set the culture for our new space? It's almost like they missed it. And I was just sort of struck by like, what was going on that they didn't notice or didn't like, or why did they allow it to happen the way they did? And maybe the forces were too strong, but I'm just super curious about that. Cause to me, that feels like where this turned it turned early. And then this is like everything that came after it was a result of making that turn, at least in the way I was interpreting it.
So I want to tag on to what you said there, because I had the same feeling where it was like a litany of things that happened, the result, but it didn't go enough for me into the root cause of what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a little bit of perspective. I haven't researched this in depth, but the same exact thing happened, you know, with less spectacular problems because of the nature of the company at Motorola. Motorola used to be, they were literally the first mobile phone. I mean, they had a number of innovations. And then the same thing happened where the financial people kind of elbowed out the engineering people. So I kind of developed the perspective that maybe that is a, like a personality kind of thing. I mean, maybe the engineer people just aren't combative or competitive or, you know, I mean, whatever you need to be able to you know, mount that that resistance. So that's something else to think of too. I think it might be kind of innate in what you expect, possibly. Okay, the wiring article. Who voted for that and would like to tell us what was most helpful there? To you.
And again, probably it was relevant to just some things that I'm kind of working on considering right now, but I thought it was a different take on, I guess I'm using org health, but even management operating systems, but socio-technical systems is what they kind of called out. So I haven't heard that speak in a while. It was a little different take on it, but I think what I liked was, you know, really talked about the importance of the socio bit, right? And getting those elements right. And, you know, working across an organization and healthy, or they use the word winning. You know, when you look at his little grid there, winning zone versus danger zone, you could say healthy zone, say whatever you want. But I think really being able to, beyond the technical, make the organization work, you need that socio bit. And I thought that was pretty good.
Anybody else?
Well, you know, I have something to say. So I couldn't make heads or tails of that picture, Mark. I would love for you to explain it to us. But I just want to say before I criticize, I am a huge fan of Gene Kim because he wrote a wonderful book called The Phoenix Project. So I was super looking forward to this article. And then I was like, there were some interesting things in here, but I was like, I don't know what that picture is.
I agree. I was like, man, he messed up this piece with this picture. I totally agree. I had to really like dig into it. And actually, I stumbled on a little video he put out too, but didn't have this picture in it. But yeah, I don't dig the picture at all. But when he talks about those components of the, what I would call the management operating system, and thinking of different levels in the organization, where are you spending your time? You can even make some connections there with what, you know, levels of part of the organization are working on what. There was a little bit of that jumped out. But the, you know, slowification, simplification, amplification, those principles are good that you want to do, right? If you're able to leverage and have an environment to make good decisions in an organization. So well, there's.
So here was my question on the article, besides the, what does the chart mean? Is he saying then that there's really not complexity and we just need to be reductionist and simplify the complexity? And I'm like, is that what he's, that almost sounds like that's what he's saying.
Yeah, I went away from the picture. I mean, the picture threw me off.
No, not in the picture, in the words, he's kind of saying like, slow it down, simplify when it's complex, like make it so it's not complex. But
well, oftentimes really I think people use complexity when it's really complication, right? And I think there's overcomplication by not paying attention to some of these things versus the complexity, if you will, of, you know, the business model or the organization. So I think if you look at it that way, again, I don't like his words always or the model, but.
So what I wondered about that was, I didn't like the picture either. I couldn't read it. I just gave up. You know, it says in there, one of the things is it's amplify the problems. And then the other one was parcel out the problems, you know, break them out, get them away from performance and all this stuff. And I thought, how would you actually go about applying that? Because I can't recall very many times when people were aligned on the problem. I mean, everybody's got, you know, or if they are aligned on the problem, not aligned on what to do and who should solve it and who should own it. You know, there's just all that fragmentation. So I thought, I'm not exactly sure what I would actually go do with this. I agree with it in theory, but what actions would you take that are different?
Yeah, let's go back to Boeing, right? I mean, if Boeing was not aligned on the overall most important thing, right? and didn't have that alignment, let alone being able to have a healthy, constructive way to deal with a problem, whatever level of problem, in a healthy way, constructive way, that could be danger zone, you know, versus if it was set up to be clear, hey, at all costs, safety is first and blah, 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 and whatever. And the mechanisms were there to be able to chunk out, for instance, hey, this is a supply chain issue first and foremost, boom, whatever, to break apart. And that's what I liked about it was just had a few, I didn't get into it. Maybe I got more out if I did look at his little video afterwards, but it kind of gave you a little bit of a hint at what you could do to try to have a better problem solving, healthy management system environment.
Good reminder. Yeah. Thinking of, can I break up this problem as opposed to try whatever they call it, eat something one piece at a time.
And I'll be straight up. I'll be straight up.
Go ahead, Jardine.
I have a question about, the break it up thing. Like, I get, of course, iterative is one thing, but reductionism is a different thing. So like, are we back to reductionism? I didn't understand if that's what he's advocating for. And by the way, amplification, like, yes, that's always, I think that's always a good thing to build those mechanisms. But like, are we trying to like, go back to this? Is that what we're saying? Breaking things up like that? Or is it iterative?
I don't know if I saw that as much as chunking it out, making it, simplifying it. This is, okay, here's the end to end. And now we're working on this, working on the report, whatever, just being able to do that by seeing the end to end.
Yeah, to me, it was a reminder of making things simple to solve them in a much easier way. I don't think it was like the reductionism in a sounds like a negative connotation. I don't think it was like that. But to me, the concepts were helpful, but were more like reminders that we shouldn't use that many acronyms. We should be use like common day words, like that kind of thing, to have more impact, to have more people listen to our message. It wasn't anything new, and I also thought that the model, the graph there, was not simplified. It was making, and it was pretty complex, trying to make something very simple, very difficult, because it's like counterintuitive. You have to read it the other way, like from right to left. And it was just very cumbersome. But the concepts were good. I liked especially the danger zone. Hey, when you overcomplicate, you are in the danger zone because people won't follow you. Simplify. I like those basic principles, but it was more like a reminder.
Yeah, at least to try. Marian, you're going off mute. You want to add in?
This was one of those articles it gave me cringes. And I think it was for all the reasons we've been saying. It's just, I worry about, this just feels like old thinking in some ways, packaged up in new gimmicky language, the ifications of everything just felt a little too buzzwordy for me. And just, there's so much risk when things are truly complex that if we oversimplify, we just end up in chaos. So, and maybe I've been influenced by the Kinevan folks too much, but like, I just, this made me go, oh, no. So that was just my reaction.
I kind of had the same thing. I thought, I just don't see how I'd use this. It's great to think about this and maybe a good reminder, like Lillian said, but I thought, everybody's got incentives. So move the problem away from performance. Where is there not performance? where exactly would I put this that, somebody actually would have the space to figure that out. I kind of had the same reaction. Anything else on that article? Otherwise, we're going to vote the other end of the range, the ones we found most tension or least useful or some kind of a uncomfortable reaction, and we'll discuss those winners next. No? Okay, good. And I put a little update to Sarah. Welcome and happy to have you kind of where we are on that. Okay, Tanya, there we go. Thank you. Okay, so these are the ones that cause tension.
Well, I won't re-vote for the ones we already talked to, even though it caused tension, obviously, for me.
Well, that's okay, because we didn't talk about it extensively. We touched on it. So if it did cause tension and you have the other side of that, then absolutely do that.
So one person was very quick to put in their vote. We're at a bouncing around. All right, so half of you have voted. Give it another couple seconds.
In all fairness, I don't love the question this one. I don't know if anyone calls me tension, but.
Well, if you found it not useful, you know, that's the, and why.
Well, we're
and
trying
everybody
to get
reads, away. Yeah. I think it's kind of like what we said about Boeing. You know, I've read extensively about that, so I can't honestly say that I read anything I didn't know, but I like the framing of it. You know, it was still not really useful, but not tangential.
We just wanted to move away from least favorite. So if you say it wasn't useful, yeah, then that's kind of hard to start a conversation about why you felt it wasn't useful.
Yeah. You and know also what? Let's kind of go in. Oh, sorry, Jordina. Go ahead.
I was just saying we were moving away also from just critiquing the article instead of the content.
Yeah, and the content. But you know what? Let's go kind of the other way around, because we, Miriam gave us an alternative take on that. Why are your organization? And someone else voted for that as well with tension. So let's have that comment, and then we'll go to that speed and sustainability one. So any other tension on that Wire article that Miriam didn't already express? Or me either? Okay. All right. So that was just the tension. All right. Let's talk about the speed and sustainability article. And that was the one about balancing act and design pivoting from scale efficiency and growth to needing speed and resilience because the environment's less certain. And there were a few points in there around that. So can someone who found that one tension causing or not useful comment start us off? Someone else voted for it besides me.
Well, you know, I'm going to talk about it, but I was letting someone else talk.
Oh, okay.
I voted for it, but I let someone else. I think it was these reasons we're talking about. So not really tension, but that topic of ambidextrous organizations or being able to do both, you know, it's been around a bit. And so it was a long, long article to kind of get at a lot of stuff that I've just kind of, you know, heard and understood pretty good.
So for me, there's a lot to say about this article, but it just, I don't even know what this article was about. It was like kind of like a word salad of different topics that I was like sustainability, speed, adaptability, what are we talking about? And then there were some little nuggets in here that we can dig into about the whole point of agility and adaptability, I think, is missed. And, you know, she talks, you know, it always triggers me when I hear someone use agility wrong, but it's like, she's talking about hierarchy and transparency. When we're talking about adaptability, it's about the dynamics of limiting WIP, right? So you don't have to rejig everything. That's how you become adaptable. And then like having work go to teams and not reforming teams every time. Like those are the keys of agility when it has to do with adaptability. And I think she missed that whole point. Like that was like, she just kind of said, hey, you know, we don't need to be so collaborative. Like that's not the point when we talk about adaptability. So that was, and then she was still stuck. I wish Dean Meyer was here, because she was talking about, I think it's a woman who wrote this article. I keep saying she, but strategy, like having your adaptability based on the strategy. You know, Dean Meyer would be on this call saying, you need your strategy to be adaptive too, right? I was going to call him and invite him, but I didn't. So we can talk about that.
I voted for this one, and many of the points that you made, that exactly, it's just you keep talking about this and talking about this, and I've been on a couple of these at this point where I've literally was around long enough to put the organization up and take it back down again because it failed. And, you know, the whole ambidextrous thing and the business within a business and all this kind of thing. And it didn't fail for those reasons. It failed for two reasons that I can see. One is three. One is incentives, you know, never aligned the incentives so that the parent organization has skin in the game. So that's a key failure point. Didn't mention that. Another one is, you know, things fail because of bureaucracy. If you've got all this bureaucracy and all these steps and everybody can stop everything, then the new business can't get what they need because you've got all these steps and bureaucracy. So the bureaucracy doesn't get addressed. And then the other thing is they stock it with talent from the mothership, and the mother, they don't know how to behave differently. So they just get in there, recreate what they had in the mothership. And then they try to fix the, you know, they have all their ideas and it becomes a process improvement company, not an innovation company, you know, process improvement for the mothership. And that wasn't the intention. So those are the three reasons that in my observation seem to cause this problem with the inability to pivot. And none of them were even mentioned. It's you know, it was just kind of, like you said, a word salad. So I thought, okay, that's great. You can write down, you published an article, but otherwise did not get much beyond that. Anybody have any other impressions? Did anybody like it? I mean, after we sit here, you know, trashing every word, did anyone have anything useful in it? Because usually there's some points or maybe something you hadn't heard of, you know, like Mark said, if you've been reading a lot, you've heard of most of those concepts, but some of it might've been new to somebody.
Hmm.
No.
Well, I put something in the chat because it did call to mind this quote about the, I put it in there, the real problem of humanity is that we have paleolithic emotions, medieval institutions, and godlike technology. And the article made me think, wow, we are using medieval, and this article is using old thinking, Miriam, to try and overcome godlike technology that we don't know how to wrangle. That's kind of what it seemed like. We're moving too fast for our own good. Like we don't, a few of the articles were about that, right? Like that's slowification is like, we can't get our arms around this anymore.
Yeah, maybe technology changes faster than people. I'm sorry.
Yeah, maybe I don't know. Maybe I took it in a different way, but I actually found it helpful because one of the last situations at work was that the priorities changed, the strategy changed. Like we had lots of changes all of a sudden. And the organization was not ready to adapt to those changes as quickly as we needed them to adapt. So when I was reading this article, I was thinking about that time when I had to help an organization to be agile. And I wish we had done that legwork before, so they were ready to be agile when we needed them, maybe with my words and triggering some people. But the point I'm trying to make is, imagine this very large, complex organization that was used to operating in a certain way. So it was like grow, 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 grow. All of a sudden, the business direction changed. And we needed to operate in a different way. We needed to think differently. We needed to act differently. And then everybody was like rushing to make it happen. And I just thought that if you design with that in mind, then you don't have to rush to adapt. That's how I took it.
Agreed. I think that core message I did agree with.
I agreed with the overall theme. I think my point, I think Mark's as well, was more bringing up these things without saying what to do differently. What you said, I mean, we all know we need to have, you know, a business within a business. We all know these things. It's just, you know, what can you do to actually, you know, really make this work? And I didn't feel like it actually gave you practical things. And then I should say my bias is always, okay, what can I use? You know, love to think, mm-hmm. but, you know, need to actually get work done as well. So that's coming in with that lens.
Okay, makes sense.
Did anyone else have anything on that? Miriam, if you don't mind, I was curious on your take on that because of your perspective on some of the other things.
Well, I have to say, I there were aspects of it as I read, like paragraph by paragraph, I was kind of like, yep, yep, yep. But then when I finished the whole thing, I was like, what did this article say? Like I literally was thinking whenever I was going to vote today, I was like, I'm not sure how I would vote on this because I'm not so clear on its core message. So I literally would have to go back and look at it again. Although there were some ideas in there that did resonate for me, which was that idea of companies acting agile versus being agile. And I noticed, I was like, yeah, I've seen that, where people sort of can pull it together for a moment to do something right as an organization, but that's not their core. They go back to their old ways of doing things. And so I didn't totally feel like she addressed how we would get there. So I don't know. I'd have to unpack it a little bit more because it wasn't super clear.
I think your reactions align with everyone else's. Before we go to the mission article, which was the other one, anybody have anything else to add on that article, the sustainability article? No? All good. All right. So then someone who voted for the, it was about a mission statement and why you can't retrofit it. That's what it was. Why you can't retrofit a mission statement. And his points there were that if the units are illogically organized to begin with, then you're not going to be successful by reformulating your mission. And seems obvious that you should do the mission first was his point. Pretty short article. Somebody did not find that useful, though. So someone who voted for that, if you could let us know. And by the way, any of you that are unable to come off mute, if you want to put things in the chat, we will certainly read them out. Somebody voted for it. Nikolai Warren, that article, he is he bounces. He's an academic, but he also is part of a partner in a startup called Reconfig, and they're trying to use AI to augment design. And so they've been working for the last 5 years, and what they're trying to figure out is what does the entry point need to be. Like, they started with organization network analysis and didn't get very far with that. And now they're trying to work with more common patterns. And what they're finding in the common patterns is the difference between core work and connection work. So it might be a common pattern, but it's a stupid common pattern because people are spending all their time connecting. So they're trying to work through that. So pretty interesting to follow him because of the journey he's on, and he never has a problem admitting that he made a mistake and trying the next thing. So he's interesting for that reason. But so anyway, this particular snippet, Dardina, Mark, did you have thoughts on it, or Rhonda?
I liked it. So I can talk about it from that regard.
Okay.
I like Nikolai's stuff. I think I like his work on unit mandates. This wasn't it. You can go deeper on unit mandates, but I think there's some really practical stuff there in clarifying unit mandates when you're trying to just clarify expectations before you get into more detailed RASI or decision rights. So I really like that. But the connection here I liked was the way he talked about mission was a bit more broader, like the overall objective of the function or unit. And I think the placement of it earlier on, like say in the macro design, and when you're thinking about the operating model, is important, because if you don't get that right in alignment at that level, then later on, when you're trying to get alignment at the micro level and decision rights and RASI stuff, you're going to run into issues. So I thought it was just a fun point, IT and that, just kind of joke the way it was written a little bit. And I've seen that a gazillion times. And I've seen it just last week when a leader was considering what should go in his part of the organization. There was no organizing really rationale. I was like, hey, I kind of done this. I know this. I want this. Versus it should go there because of some kind of mission or agreed alignment on an objective of that part of the organization. So I thought it was good.
I can add on to that. I had a little tension, and not in a bad way, because mission should align, like something about values is what you're doing and why you're doing it. And so I am in healthcare. And so I've been watching for years, every single mission will say something along the lines of patient experience and health, outcomes, health. And every single thing is to cost. So you say that's the mission, but every single initiative is around costs. And there's some validity to that. You want the lowest cost solution, but it really isn't aligning. And so I've been thinking about mission, why are they even there if you're not going to actually follow your mission or align anything to your mission or do anything to the mission? So I came out of it kind of thinking about that, what are we really trying to do with these mission statements that we don't follow?
And that's where I think at surface value, I went right to, okay, is this a mission thing, you know, a mission values thing. And I think, again, lost in translation a little bit, but I think the use of the word mission is a bit broader here and more like a remit or part of that objectives of a different part of the organization. So if you think of it that way, which again is how I interpreted it, I didn't get down that track of where I totally agree with what you just said. I just saw it.
Yeah. And anyone else?
I didn't vote for this one. I'm curious of who did, but it's fine. It's, you know, there's nothing for me to disagree with here. But of course, if the organization is investing money in a group of people, they should be clear on why they're making that investment, right? That's how I always look at it. Like, if you're going to invest money in this, tell me why you're investing in it. And then we can figure out how to phrase our mission around what investment you're making.
Yeah, that's a really good point too. Then you'd have a more honest mission. It feels like when I see these things, it feels like and you know, and I'm not usually involved at that point. I'm at the point where they want to actually execute, but I get the mission and it's like, who let you do this? You know, everything you're telling me is the opposite of what you're saying needs to happen.
just to be clear, and again, maybe just how I interpret it, I don't think the intent was that level of broader mission. I think it was, let's say if you're in the operations part of the business, the objective or mission for what your part of the organization is doing versus supply chain versus sales, you know, it was more about clarifying
purpose.
The purpose of that
purpose and output. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think so. I think so too, but it still made me, all those things kind of, you know, come together too, because it'll be, again, they'll state the initiative, you know, it kind of just doesn't really align a lot of times. I feel like people kind of go through the motions on stating the purpose. And then, like you said, Jardine, it's like, well, you're making this investment and what needs to happen because of that. So maybe it's kind of outlived its usefulness as a term.
But I think there's another thing here too. And I think this pattern shows up in other places and organizations where it's sort of like, let's be all fuzzy and nebulous and then put the onus on the poor people who are on the receiving end to figure it out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, all the time. Yeah. Happens. Okay, we finished talking about our articles. If anybody has any other general thoughts, we certainly want to hear those. Otherwise, we will give you a little bit of an overview about what we do here and when. Like I said, saw some new names and hopeful this is useful to you. And we'll talk about what this actually is, and then we'll conclude for today. Anybody have any other final thoughts and any comments on anything?
Can we do the theme?
Oh yeah, the theme. I'm sorry, I forgot about that. You like the theme, and I like forgot the all theme. About it. Okay, yeah, let's go around. You start. Thank you for the reminder.
Oh, I'd like to hear. I have trouble figuring out myself. I'd like to hear what everyone else thinks. But I'm going to go with what Miriam had said earlier, which is I think the theme here is old thinking applied to new realities. Like, yeah, trying to force fit old thinking in. That's kind of why I was grumpy about the articles today.
I kind of will add on to that. And I think we're in a phase, I see it a little bit differently. I think that's happening, but remember, people can only change so fast. So I feel like there's some kind of theme about speed, because you look at innovation. I mean, what'd they do first? They put a steering wheel and an engine on a horse buggy. Okay. And it took probably 15 years, you know, 20 years to get past the steering wheel and engine on a horse buggy. So I feel like everything has to go through that phase, you know, where you're just kind of trying to slap what you have on top of other things. Same thing happened with what they called electrification. You know, they could not get through their heads that you would take the work to the outlet and plug it into the outlet. So they kept doing all, you know, so lots of factories failed, like half of the Dow Jones between 1890 and 1930, because they were trying to run all these wires to where their work was instead of taking the work to the plug, you know? And so that, you know, lots of things like that. So I think we're kind of in that phase. And, you know, for a lot of these different things. So I think the theme is exactly what you said. It's the old thinking applied. But I think what's a little bit different here is I don't know, I wasn't there, but I feel like this expectation of speed is maybe not realistic or reasonable given human limitations. So that's kind of a very long way of stating what I thought the theme was. So, okay, let's keep going with other people.
I saw a theme too of like managing conflicting realities. So, you know, it's sort of, I, probably can't articulate why I think that, but that was sort of what was coming up for me in whether it's speed and sustainability, or if it's, you know, the people versus the process, or I don't know, just felt like they're trying to make sense of what do we do with these conflicting realities.
That was kind of in that camp too, Miriam. I think maybe it's a broad one, but the alignment, misalignment, I think, of the overall objectives, goals, and how you go about that. So similar vein. I mean, there's four kind of different articles. I don't know about an overall theme because they're all a little different, but that would be it.
And I'm going to guess Eileen and Lillian and Alex and Sarah are where you can't come off mute. Kaylin, we'll give you just a second if anybody wants to come off mute and chime in. Or maybe we covered it. Okay. All right then. So if you haven't joined before, Organization Design Forum, this is one of our monthly events. So we do this every Wednesday at this time. Curated content, you sign up for it, you read it, we discuss it, and try to get insights. We have other events too on organizationdesignforum.org. And one of our key events coming up first week of May is our conference in St. Paul, Minnesota, where we will have outstanding speakers and contributors to go more in depth on this topic. We have, if any of you are international, we didn't catch where you're from, but we have a sister organization, European Organization Design Forum. And we're partners actually in this event, and they have a number of events as well, if that works better for your time zone, and network with those practitioners also. So I want to make everybody aware of that. And then otherwise, I think, did I cover everything, Tanya?
I think so. We've got a couple of events coming up in March and April that are outside of our regular coffee club. And then this newsletter. So one of them is going to be the start of our series on being an external consultant and some of the behind the scenes things that it takes to run your business. So that's going to be led by Kate Dixon, one of our advisory board members. And then we've got Paul Tolchinsky and Bernard Moore working on a session in early April for how businesses can just be better, their purpose can be better aligned with serving the world and the community. So we'll start promoting those when I get the last of the details ready for that. And then some of the conference sessions, we had 38 proposals for peer-led sessions at our conference. And we're only able to select 10 of them. Jardina is going to be one of our presenters for one of the peer-led sessions. And Mark Robinson is partnering with a couple of his colleagues at USAA to lead another one of the sessions. But the ones that weren't selected, we are working with some of those presenters to join us in a future virtual community conversation. So we'll have one on design bias coming out of that. And I don't remember what the other one was. So lots of stuff coming up. We'll ramp up and keep you engaged and busy.
Yeah. So the takeaway there's a lot of different events, and they're all from on the events link on our website. So there's a helpful calendar there to figure out what you can join and when and the time zones. So,
yeah. Okay. When I get the information, they're added. So those last couple of ones, we're still getting the last details set up, but they'll be on there shortly. And then we always send out an announcement 2 to 3 weeks in advance as well. So I'll stay on the line for a moment or two if anybody has any questions.
You can stop the recording, though. Stay on the line, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. I will as well, if anybody has any questions.
Otherwise, I wish you all a great rest of your day.
Thanks for coming, Rhonda. Good to actually.